This episode is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. Experienced wealth managers who go above and beyond to guide and support you. CanDo is more than just an attitude. It's navigating today for a brighter tomorrow. Visit candowealth.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Max Jeffrey and I'm joined today by Katie Bowles and by Stephen Bush of the Financial Times. It was PMQs today, and Keir Starmer asked the Prime Minister if he was
proud to be bankrolled by someone using racist and misogynist language when he says the member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington makes you want to hate all black women.
Starmer was talking about comments made by Tory donor Frank Hester, who allegedly said that Diane Abbott made him want to hate all black women. Rishi Sunak said that the comments were racist and wrong. Katie, this wasn't an easy session for the Prime Minister, was it?
It was a really difficult exchange. You have to take into account the events of this week, which began with a Guardian story on the donor in question, Hester, and the fact that he had comments unearthed about Diane Abbott, about what he made him feel, potentially feel about all other black women, what he wanted to do violently. And then you had an apology for offence calls, but not an apology for racism. Then you had the Tory line yesterday, so on Tuesday, was initially to suggest that this was an offensive comment, but it wasn't a racist comment. That was a line pushed by people like Mel Stride, other Rishi Sunak loyalists. And I think there was a sense around 11 a.m. yesterday, which is just like, do they really think, maybe earlier in fact, do they think this line is going to hold? And then you get to late in the afternoon, and this is after a few lobby briefings where the number 10 spokesperson line is still offensive, but perhaps don't want to get into why it's offensive. And then Kemi Badenoch, the business secretary, does a two-tweet thread saying these comments are racist, but also saying if people want to apologise for things, they shouldn't be cancelled forevermore, was effectively the meaning. So yes, call it racist, but I think leaving the door open to that person either remaining as a donor, not being completely cancelled, or potentially, you know, the Tories keeping that money, which is where Labour are now trying to go. So it was, and then after that, you had Rishi Sunak almost being bounced by Kemi Badenoch, though of course number 10 figures will dispute this, into pushing out his own statement quite soon after in written form, saying that he did think the comments were racist. So it meant, I think, this morning there was a real sense this should be a slam dunk for Keir Starmer. I think it was a difficult session for Rishi Sunak. I think given all the circumstances happening right now, it could have been even worse. But certainly, you know, you had Rishi Sunak, refusing to condone the comments, calling them racist. But when it comes to the question which Labour want to push, which is, well, are you going to return the money you've got, the 10 million so far, and are you going to accept so in the future, not giving any cast iron commitments that he would do as they are suggesting?
Stephen, do you think the current Tory line then, that they don't really want to talk about what they're going to do with the money, whether they would give it back or give it to charity, do you think this current line will hold? And how did the government get itself in such a mess?
I think the current line sort of has to hold because, and you know, any American listeners will start laughing at this point, but 10 million is a huge amount of money for a British political party. They will have spent some of it, almost all of the rest of it will be allocated to, you know, staff budgets, advertising budgets. So in some ways, just as the Liberal Democrats still haven't returned £2.5 million they got some time ago from someone who later went to prison for fraud, for the basic reason that if you're a political party, you can't just magic that kind of sum out of the air, even if, you know, technically from a moral perspective, maybe you should hand it back. So I think this line will have to hold. I mean, I sort of think the reason why they ended up in this position was simple political ineptitude. It was exactly as Katie described, pretty obvious, I think, to seemingly everyone other than Rishi Sunak and his inner circle, that they were going to have to get to a position like the one Kemi Badenoch, whether or not you think she did, I would say fairly obvious, she did bounce them into, but they were going to have to get into that position because it's sort of the only position that ticks the box of the comments as reported can't be defended. The Conservative Party, like any other UK political party, doesn't have £10 million down the back of a sofa to return. And so you need an answer which allows you to say, yes, that was wrong, and then leaves open the possibility that you can rehabilitate someone who is literally incredibly valuable to you. So, yeah, I think it was simple ineptitude that led to where they were.
Katie, this is coming the same week as Lee Anderson defected to Reform. Do you think these two issues have some relationship? You write about in your cover piece that's coming out tomorrow about how the right is splitting. What does the Tory parliamentary party think of the way they're handling this row?
So I don't think the donor row really falls into the split on the right, just because it's not as low. If you think about Lee Anderson's comments, of course, all the Tory MPs said, oh, the comments are very bad, very clumsy. And there were some who thought the punishment was too harsh. Whereas I think on the donor situation, I'm yet to speak to a Tory MP who's saying, actually, let's be, you know, more fair to this man. You know, there's lots of MPs on the right who think that Rishi Sunak was too slow to come out and call the comments racist, and they did not like the initial line yesterday. Now, I think that means that it is leading to criticism of Rishi Sunak and the Downing Street operation, but that is different to, you know, does this row mean people that can think justice for Hester and join the Reform Party? I would say not. So it's different in that sense. What I do think is happening is, which does feed into just Tory problems, is this week definitely the mood in the Tory party feels pretty bad. I think you had a budget last week that was pretty lackluster by all standards. It didn't do anything wrong per se, in the sense there was no great surprise in it that meant suddenly everything started to unravel. But I think where MPs' expectations were, which we did talk about in the podcast, was all about income tax and almost having this pre-election sense to the budget. It didn't have any of that. So you combine that, which probably landed fairly positively, but no great reaction. Then you get to Lee Anderson going to Reform. And then you get to this, where I think there's just a sense of, does Rishi Sunak have the politics in him to kind of deal quickly with these things? Is the operation too slow? And it does mean you're at a week where, you know, people are getting very excited because Rishi Sunak, well, he attended the spring reception of the 1922 committee on Monday. And before that, he met with the committee and also met briefly with Graham Brady. Now, figures in number 10 say that is pretty standard. But I think what you can read, no matter what, you know, who says who and who says what, is the fact that there is so much fascination about the fact that he met with Graham Brady, and there is a focus on that, speaks to the fact there's lots of unhappiness around at the moment. Now, I'm not suggesting that Rishi Sunak is about to be forced out and so forth. I think we're some way from that. But in terms of what all these events come together, I think there's just a real sense that, again, that Tory recovery is looking further and further away, and Rishi Sunak's problems and his ability to lead is becoming harder at the moment.
And Stephen, now looking on the Labour side, after Prime Minister's questions, it looked like Keir Starmer and Diane Abbott had a conversation. The journalist Owen Jones has reported that Keir Starmer asked if there's anything he could do, and Diane Abbott said, well, you could restore the whip. And Diane Abbott has now said, this is true, this is the conversation that they had. Is there much of an appetite within Labour to restore the whip to Diane Abbott? Is this ongoing situation where Keir Starmer is having to defend her because he does want to attack the Tories but doesn't want to reinstate the whip? Is it difficult for him?
Yes and no. So I'm going to answer the no bit first because that's easier. And then broadly speaking, I mean, indeed, as Kemi Badenoch herself demonstrated, you don't need to agree with or endorse anything Diane Abbott has said to think that the reported remarks are beyond the pale. And indeed, one reason why it has been bruising for the Prime Minister this week is that, as with Katie, I'm yet to speak to a Conservative MP who thinks the new line is too far. And actually, there are several MPs who think that Lee Anderson ought to have been remained in and was harshly treated. So it's aggravated that bit of the thing. So it's not hard for Keir Starmer to both defend Diane Abbott and to hold her at arm's length. Where the situation with the whip is more complex and difficult for the Labour Party is that you have, in Diane Abbott's case, a very senior MP, you know, someone who made history with her first election win in 1987, who said something which I think she herself has now acknowledged was it beyond the pale. And there is a lot of anxiety at the top of the Labour Party about whether or not it would harm the Labour Party electorally more to be seen to shunt her out into enforced retirement, or if it would harm them more to go, oh, well, you know, you've had your months out on the naughty step, come back in. That is a concern for them, but it's, I would say, completely separate from this row. They will, I imagine, end up making that decision fairly late. It will probably be a question of, and I should declare an interest here as one of the residents of that constituency, and as someone who's not a Labour Party member, of course, you have the weird thing when you live in Hackney that the decisions of the people who are matter rather more for who you're governed by than anything you yourself might do in a ballot box. But, you know, there will I imagine, be a decision very late on about whether or not what they want to do is impose some non-shaver who's very loyal to Keir Starmer, who'll be a loyal MP on the right of the party for 50 years, or if they feel that the risks politically of ending Diane Abbott's career by not letting her back in are too high.
And is one more likely than the other?
I think at the moment, I think it's more likely than not than they would impose some central casting type who'll sit in that safe seat for 50 years. I think, however, by the time they have to make that decision, there will have been an election in the London mayoralty, there have been a by-election in Blackpool South, and I think the thing to watch in both of those contests is whether or not there is any credence to this idea that the Labour Party does have electoral worries to its left. If at the end of those contests, London MPs in particular go, no, look, we've got to show a bit of leg, I think then they would at that point probably restore the whip.
I think the very fact you've got Diane Abbott's recent defenders saying that she should have the whip restored, include Harriet Harman and Ed Balls, shows this isn't just, you know, a Corbynite faction, left faction calling for this.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you very much for listening.